love. Exciting and new. Come aboard. We're expecting you.
Everybody, and welcome to episode 93, the Valentine's edition of the Ron and Brian podcast. I'm Ron, as always, joined by the man who once thought he felt Cupid's arrow, but it was actually just a steak knife. Brian, how are you today, sir?
I'm a little triggered right now because that just felt a little too close to comfort on that reference right there.
I mean, I feel there will be a very small number of people that will realize how fantastic of a joke that just was. And the rest of you all are just going to have to take my word for it that that was just a brilliant joke.
Kind of speechless right now. Kind of speechless. That's the second best one you've ever done. And the best one was on our one-year anniversary episode when you combined all 51 previous references together.
Well, we're just a couple months away from the two-year anniversary, so I'm going to need to figure out a way to top that. So I got to think about that.
All right, you got a little pressure there.
So before we move on, as you know, before we had been trying to get sponsors for Drink of the Week, had been kind of mixed bag. So now we've just kind of resorted to just trying sponsors for just the podcast in general. So we are happy this Valentine's week to welcome a very special sponsor, 1-800-Flowers. That's right, 1-800-Flowers. When you want to order your loved one a bouquet that may or may not look like the picture on the website, in hopes that they forget what a prick you are for the other 364 days of the year, that's 1-800-Flowers. Brian, how are you celebrating Valentine's Day this year?
I'll be going out for dinner with a friend of mine. That's pretty much, I like to keep it low. I like to keep it down. I like to keep it dirty.
And you managed to do all those things, so kudos to you.
I certainly try. What about yourself? Are you taking your special lady
the wife
out?
And I will be going out on Saturday to one of our favorite restaurants down in Philadelphia. So be a nice, again, quiet evening. We're of that age where, we don't like to party too much. We don't like to go to concerts. We don't like to be around other people. So it'll be a good quiet evening.
Now, will you be lighting 100 votive candles in your bedroom for when you take your lady to bed tomorrow night?
Probably not. She tends not to stay awake past 8:30, so I think by the time I get them all lit, she would just be asleep anyway.
Will you be sprinkling rose petals over the bedspread for her, so when she gets to bed, it is the romantic place where should be deflowered?
I think rose petals are bad for cats, so I can't leave them just lying around.
Will you be wearing the edible underwear that we purchased when we were in Philly for the podcast festival?
If I can be honest, I actually tried them on a few months ago, and I've yet to be able to get them off.
So
I don't know how edible they are at this point.
She's going to, instead of chewing them off, she's going to have to lick them off.
There's chafing. That's all I'm going to say. There's definite chafing. Maybe a little dry rot.
Try some Dr. Scholl's powder. From what I hear, that should help.
We'll give it a shot. Let's try some drinking. How about it?
Drink of the week.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Sláinte.
Who's
drink of the week?
We really do need to try and find a sponsor again for Drink of the Week. Because I liked mixing the, when the themes got mixed up a bit.
So, understood.
But anyway.
I appreciate that.
So what are we drinking this week, Brian? You put the poll up. We got the beers from our curated Tavor crates and had a couple beers from Anchorage Brewing, was it?
Yes, it is. All the way from Anchorage, Alaska. This is a special moment for me. It's been a long time since, you know, there were so many issues that we had. Our server was hijacked and taken to Tehran, Iran. My special investigator was aboard that fated flight leaving Iran going to the Ukraine. We hired Ivanka Trump's ballot company to monitor our Drink of the Week poll, all the way down to using the Shadow app last week. And it was almost to a point where I felt it was almost time for maybe the idea of a Drink of the Week for us to just pass it by. Maybe it was just unworkable. However,
I mean, it was a comedy of errors after a while.
It was getting embarrassing. However, the kind folks at Tavor, reached out to us and said, listen, we sent you guys crates of beer. We issued you your own promo code, 525-401, $10 off your first Tavor crate. If you use promo code 525-401, show your love for Ron and Brian. And we said, you know what, we will do a poll. And there must have been something special about the fine folks at Anchorage Brewing, because this week's poll went off without a hitch. We put up
and a lot of buzz, a lot of people commenting on it, a lot of people voting. So knock on wood, we keep it going for a second week next week.
I think the people were just happy to see that after so many weeks of adversity, that Ron and Brian were able to triumph over all the different obstacles that had been thrown our way. We had our Drink of the Week poll. We put up the Medusa, which was a ale, up against Bitter Monk. And those of you who went out and voted for Bitter Monk knew that if there's one type of beer that Ron and Brian do love, we love our Belgium-style double IPAs that are aged in French oak Chardonnay barrels.
Yeah, this one's going to be complex, I feel.
Well,
like they triple ferment it. And then just it's a lot of work that goes into this. Like, I can't even imagine how long it took to brew this, but it's got a pungent smell to it, I guess is the best way to put it.
Well, you're picking up right now are the Citra hops. So a lot of people would mistake it. I mean, it's a subtle flavor. A lot of people hear Citra hops and they confuse that with an actual citrus. They're thinking that there's lemon rinds or orange peels. No, these are a special type of hops. They're Citra hops. And what happens is that they come in the third stage of the fermenting. First, it's in a tank in Belgium yeast, which we all know is your standard IPA. Then it goes second into the French Chardonnay barrels with Brett, who I don't know. And then finally, in a bottle with a third yeast for natural carbonation. Ron, you've just taken a sip. What's your vote?
Ooh, it is strong.
Ooh,
you taste the Chardonnay. Like, there's
holy
no question
shit
about it. It tastes like a double IPA with a very strong wine undertaste. Like, you get, oh, and then the oak comes in at the end. You all right over there?
I want to talk to the manager. Like, after taking a sip of this, I feel like I'm wine drunk, and I want to talk to the manager because I specifically said that I wanted truffle fries, and instead I just got sweet potato, and I'm not okay with this, Ron.
It's a good beer. I don't know that I could have more than one of these at a sitting.
This is not a passive beer. This is not the kind of beer that you are going to sip and not get immediately distracted as you literally as you taste it. I mean, it is a very, I want to say pungent, but it's not necessarily a negative, like New York City garbage on a August morning when you walk by a fish market. That's pungent. This is an in-your-face flavor. The profile on this is ludicrous.
It kicks you in the mouth right away and does not apologize.
I just feel better that we didn't pay for this.
Well, kudos to the folks at Anchorage Brewing. That was a good one. Really makes me want to go try the Medusa. Probably be a good follow-up, the little lighter ale. So we'll get a couple other beers out there for next week's Drink of the Week poll. So we definitely appreciate your vote. And Brian, you have something else to say?
I was going to ask you, in terms of the Medusa beer, now, will we be drinking that after this? Or are we saving Medusa for another Drink of the Week poll?
We could hold on to it, so that way we can kind of extend the Tavor contribution to the podcast.
Understood.
That's my thought. So again, keep your eyes open for next week's Drink of the Week poll. We'll have it up on Facebook. Maybe we'll throw it up on Twitter also. Or as always, you can go to ronandbrianpodcast.com for all things Ron and Brian, including links to our social media.
This
week
in
Racism.
Well, I got to tell you, Brian, it was much like for Drink of the Week. It was one hell of a roller coaster ride this week for This Week in Racism. The votes went back and forth. Tom Bertel took an early lead. Shaheen Borda came on strong towards the end, actually ended up in a tie between the two, the Facebook and the Twitter. And as you know, per the This Week in Racism rules, in the event of a tie, the champion retains their title. You have to beat the man to be the man. Tom Bertel couldn't do that. Shaheen Borna is now a two-time winner and will go up against a new opponent. That apparently is all he'll be doing, as Ball State University announced earlier this week that he has been banned from teaching for the rest of the semester. No word yet as to what Shaheen's future is at the university. Brian, this is 2 weeks in a row now that Shaheen has shocked the world, and I know shocked you. You picked Tom Bertel. This is 2 weeks in a row now, a rare losing streak for you in picking This Week in Racism winners.
Clearly, Ron, I'm not in a position where I can speak with authority in terms of what is a quality racist anymore. Shaheen Borna, who knew that this cow had legs? The ability to sit there and order a African-American student in your class to change his seat, then tell him to change his seat again, calling the police when he doesn't the second time around. I think it's quite possible that the level of racism Shaheen Borna brought to the table here is stronger in the eyes of the populace than I gave him credit for. I don't know. Are we possibly looking at a number one seed for the 2020 Racist of the Year poll?
I mean, it's very possible. We did get some comments on Twitter, some people talking about why they voted the way they did, which I loved. We always like to hear the mindset of our fans as they place their votes. At Bri Coons had voted for Bertel, saying just the casual way it comes out of his mouth makes him a winner. Which was interesting. But then another interesting comment from at Bennett Writing, who said, Bertel is racist, but Borna actually endangered a student's life by calling cops. No contest, Borna far, far worse. Both are shit stains, but Borna could have gotten a student injured or killed. He should be fired and shunned.
Wow. I can't say
pretty
that
to the point.
Yeah, I can't say I disagree. I mean, you know, it's the thing of, we sit there and maybe it's white privilege, but, you know, you sit there and think to yourself, somebody calling cops on someone, you don't really, you know, in my mind, and maybe I'm not as woke as you are, Ron, but my immediate thoughts don't go to a place where I think that somebody can, where their life is jeopardized by the police being involved.
Well, again, you speak of white privilege. I mean, I think most white people don't have that concern, where if you are an African-American, it's a major concern in our country at this time.
Hmm.
Let's look and see who we were considering for contenders for this week. A couple of high school choices again, going out to California at the end of a high school basketball game in Santa Maria. Students from Rigetti High chanted, "Where's your passport?" at the team from St. Joseph High School, which has three players from Puerto Rico and one player from France. Coming out to the East Coast in New Jersey, a complaint was filed against Lawrence Cuneo, an eighth grade social studies teacher at Toms River Intermediate East, due to a classroom lesson he gave on slavery, where students were allegedly forced to pick cotton like slaves and lay on the floor while Cuneo kicked them and made sounds like a whip cracking. A school district spokesman has said that Cuneo meant no ill intent, but they are currently investigating the claim. You would think by this point there's been enough articles on teachers doing interactive slavery classes and them just all going poorly. Like, why would you, why as a teacher would you even go there at this point?
I think it's safe. And keep in mind, history is written by the winners. And at this point, I think that the history that's being written says, don't reenact anything having to do with slave trade in your classroom.
All right. But those were not bad enough to be our contender for this week in racism. For that honor goes to Arizona and Hans Berglund, founder and CEO of fertilizer firm Agroplasma. He was caught on video using a racial slur towards an Uber driver. The driver, Randy Clark, who says that he had previously been sexually assaulted by a front seat rider, asked Berglund to sit in the back seat, which Berglund took issue with. Thankfully, Mr. Clark had a couple of dash cams in his car and was able to catch the following audio.
I don't like when people sit in the front.
I cannot sit there?
I don't like when people sit in the front.
Then I'm going to order something else.
All right, sounds good.
So cancel it.
Okay? We'll do. Thank you.
No, are you fucking serious with me?
No, I don't like when people sit in the front, period. I'll cancel and refund you.
Okay, let me do this. I'm going to ride in the back, and I'm going to file a complaint, okay?
Because I'm going
to... I have the right to make my own offer.
I am an independent contractor, and I have a right to deny this ride.
Good. So let's take a discussion about that.
No, please leave my vehicle.
Yes. No. Wait, take a look at this later. Come on.
No, please. Sir, please leave my vehicle. I canceled your...
Well, honestly, I'm here. I'm sitting here in the back
seat. Please leave my vehicle.
Is that because I'm white?
No, sir. You're it's not because
nigger.
You're white.
You're a
man. This is good because I have two dash cams.
That fucking unbelievable. Screw you, you idiot.
So Berglund has since been relieved of his duties at Agroplasma, with the company announcing a new interim CEO while investigating the incident. Again, we have said it many, many times in the past when this type of audio comes out, that N-word just naturally rolls off the tongue.
And it really is a showstopper. I mean, it's, you know, it feels like it is a game changer in conversation. You clearly heard two people that were on opposite approaches in terms of how they thought this interaction was going to go. And then suddenly you have the N-word dropped. And suddenly it is literally, in my opinion, it is nails on the chalkboard, right down, slow and dirty. It's what I don't understand is why this guy was, why he wanted to sit in the front seat so badly.
Yeah, I don't get that. But you know, and early on, you think it's just going to resolve itself. Like, you know, Hans wants to sit in the front seat. He can't, so he's going to get another ride. You know, Randy Clark says, all right, I'll cancel it. I'll give you a refund. You think it's all going to wrap up. But no, Hans hops in the back seat, and then it just escalates from there.
Yeah, really uncomfortable about that one. And if you're going to ask me my opinion, I think we're going to have a new racist of the week next week.
All right. Well, you are brave in continuing with your voting pattern or with your prognostication pattern. So we shall see. As always, the fans, you decide via your votes who's going to win. We've got our two-time winner, Shaheen Borner, going up against Hans Berglund. So we will have the polls up on Facebook and Twitter, and you guys help us decide who is the worst of the worst.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
All right, Brian, what's sticking in your craw this week?
You know, I had to think about it because overall I'd say I had a pretty good week.
So
I saw a couple concerts, had some dinner with some friends. Overall, I would say a good week. And
so life is good.
Well, It's almost good, and I'll tell you where things kind of went askew for me. I ordered a couple things from Amazon this week.
Okay, as you often do.
They showed up in one box. So obviously Amazon bundled several orders. Now, I live in an apartment building. So there are three options for the Amazon delivery person. One, if the package is small enough, they put it in my mailbox, which I am I'm okay with. Second one, they leave it on the ground floor by the mailboxes, which is on the inside of a locked door. Their third option is to take the elevator upstairs and drop it off in front of my door. What I like,
I would think that last one is the least desirable because it takes the most time.
For the delivery person.
Yes.
But most desirable for me.
Well, yes, of course.
I like having a package right in front of me. What I also like is that they...
I've heard that you like having a package right in front of you.
Oh, God, do I love having a package in front of me. It is so... It's so reassuring. Anyway, so I come home the other day. I think this was Tuesday night. No, it was Monday night. And somebody has ripped open my box.
Oof. Nothing painful than that.
You beat me to it. I was going to say there's nothing more painful than having your box ripped open. But somebody had actually ripped my box open inside the box. And I have no, you know, I'm an open book. I'll share with the world what I ordered from Amazon. I offered a coffee bean grinder because mine broke. I ordered a pipe snake
for your bathroom sink.
Exactly. And then I ordered two bottles of mouthwash.
Okay.
Somebody ripped the box open and grabbed one bottle of mouthwash and took off with it.
Doesn't seem like a crime that's that worth it.
The problem was, because of where the box was, I believe it was one of my neighbors that did this.
It would make sense. I doubt somebody would, you know, break into the building just to steal a bottle of mouthwash. It was
exactly.
Probably one of your scummy neighbors stealing shit.
So now I've lost faith in my neighbors.
I mean, I think you just have to go around smelling the breath of people that live around you.
You say that like I don't normally do that.
I mean, just you got to step up your game a little bit.
Do I still have the ability to massage my crotch when I ask them to breathe in my nose?
I would expect it no other way.
Awesome. Ron, what's the worst part of your week?
Well, worst part, and again, this is a very maybe minor to some, but big to me. Now, you're a man. You're a professional man. You work in a professional office like I do. You have to wear a dress shirt every day, correct?
Of course.
Would it be a fair statement to say that you have a favorite brand of dress shirt?
I do.
You do? A dress shirt that when you have to go buy another dress shirt, you just go and you get that same brand because you just like it so much. It fits you well. It's comfortable. You love it.
I would say yes.
I had that.
Okay.
A company called Enro. So I had found it in like West Virginia a couple of years ago. Forgot to bring a shirt with me. Went out, bought it. Was like, oh, this is actually a pretty nice shirt. So I've been buying them exclusively from Enro for the last couple of years. I'm also a very messy individual, so I spilled something on one of my blue dress shirts. Dry cleaner couldn't get it out, so I'm like, all right, I will just order another blue dress shirt. Go to Enro.com, just a message saying, hey, thank you for the 100 years we've been in business. We are now closed. Just no going out of business sale. No, by the way, we're going to close. At the end, we're done. Fuck you. So now, thankfully, I was able to find a couple shirts on Amazon, which, of course, are now higher priced than they used to be because the company's out of business. But it hurts, Brian, because now I know eventually I'm going to need to go find another favorite dress shirt.
And how do you spell Enro?
Enro.
If I may ask, what made these shirts your favorite?
The material was very soft, you know, but it still held up. Like, you know, how sometimes you get a very soft dress shirt and it gets wrinkled very easily.
Yes.
It wasn't the case with these. Kind of held the form, you know, held up after a number of washings, you know, fit my massive girth, well, and just liked it. Liked the collars, the whole nine yards. It was just top to bottom, the best dress shirt I've owned in many, many years. And now it's just going by the wayside, Brian, and it hurts. It hurts a lot.
Do you like your collars with the button down?
I hate the button down collars.
Really? What don't you like about them?
You know what it is? So we don't wear ties at work anymore. That's kind of a change we've made over the last couple of years.
Right.
So I use, are you familiar with working stiffs? The collar stays? They're the ones with the magnets that go on the inside of the shirt to hold your...
Yes.
So I wear those, and I think it gives the shirt a very crisp look, okay. Whereas the button-down ones just don't give the same high-class appearance that I like to give.
Okay, that makes sense.
What about you? Are you you prefer the button-down?
I prefer the button, so this way I don't have to worry about where the collar is located. Sometimes they'll fray out. Sometimes a collar stay will actually weigh the shirt down a bit, depending on the manufacturers. You can say, you can even come at me and be like, well, that's probably your cheaper shirt. So I'm gonna be like, yes, indeed. I prefer a metal collar stay than the plastic one. I throw that shit out. But I do like the button down.
Okay. I mean, I'm not gonna shame you over it. I mean, I'm considering it, but I'm not going to shame you over it.
You can call me white trash. I have no problem with that. I think it's very clear between the two of us which one of us is bringing style and class, and which one of us is just trying to, you know, skate by without anybody realizing what a piece of garbage he is. I'm gonna say this. Speaking of which, this Chardonnay flavor is so strong in this beer. I had no idea.
I don't want to say it's offensive to the tongue, but you really need to like a good Chardonnay, or you're not going to like this beer.
I'm
on the fence about this beer now.
Oh, I don't like the beer. Like, I have no problem saying I don't like the beer. And what I'm shocked by, and you can even say, Brian, this just shows how ignorant you are, but how aging a beer in a Chardonnay barrel, the flavor of the wine becomes so infused into the beer.
Oh yeah, no, that's why they do it. It gets a very intense flavor because, you know, especially the wines that are aged very long in these barrels, you know, the wood soaks up that flavor, yeah. And then you put the beer in there, even if it's for like 6 or 8 months, it really pulls that out of the wood.
Whew. Wow.
And normally you like pulled wood, but
oh god, do I love
your beer apparently.
Boy, what is with the sexual innuendos this week?
I don't know. I'm just, you know what? It's Valentine's Day, Brian, and seeing you has just got me all worked up.
Understood. Understood. Well, clearly, it's also the fact that I think, and obviously, it just seems like there's I feel there's disappointment on your side that you're not making tomorrow a special day.
Well, tomorrow will be special. I haven't figured out how, but I'll try and make tomorrow a special day.
Will you be throwing a move on the wife in the morning?
I mean, you never know. You never know when my motherfucking suaveness might come out.
Can I make a suggestion?
Please do. I'm always open to your suggestions.
Drop a Quaalude into her morning coffee.
Mm.
Wait about 25 minutes and then throw your move on her as you pick her up off the floor and carry her over to the living room couch.
Understood. See, you feel that we have that much free time in the morning. I always meant to ask you, what time do you go into the office?
I arrive at work at 8. I wake up at 5:30. I drink coffee and watch the news until 6:30. I shower, get dressed between 6:30 and 7, out the door at 7, get to work at 8 o'clock.
All right, because we're usually up by 6 and then out the door by 7. So it's a tight window. Got to feed all 700 animals, you know, shower, get ready, and roll out the door.
Now, have you ever gone to feed an animal that you did not realize that you owned? Like, is there ever a time where you go to put a bowl down and suddenly there's like a different cat that suddenly walks up to you?
I mean, every now and then I forget and I'm like, who are you? And I'll be like, oh, right, we got another one. But nobody wanders in. Also, just a quick wrap up from our Super Bowl prop bet. We posted this on our social media before, but I would just like to, you know, confirm that I did own up to my side of the bet. Brian pretty much ran the table on the Super Bowl prop bets. So therefore, I had to make a donation of $100. Brian had asked if I could do it to a charity that was assisting the animals displaced by the Australian bushfires. So one of the ones I found that was doing a lot of the work was the New South Wales Wildlife Information Rescue and Education Service. So I sent them $100 US, which equates to $149 in Australian dollars, and hopefully that will help because there are still a lot of animals that are displaced that they're attempting to take care of. Brian, I hope that that was an acceptable charity and that we can consider the bet closed.
Absolutely. I think what I actually got a kick out of was that you waited for the afternoon of the day that we were recording so to make that donation, just so that you can claim during this week's podcast that you are a man of your word.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I had forgotten up till today. And then I was like, oh, yeah, I gotta settle up. So, but it got taken care of. So I don't know why you got to behave that way.
If it makes you feel any better, I had completely forgotten about it. And you probably could have gotten away with it without me even noticing.
All right. You know what you can also get away with, Brian? Finding great values at the sponsor of the second half of our podcast, Whole Foods. That's right, Whole Foods. Our employees gave up their benefits so Jeff Bezos could buy a huge mansion. That's Whole Foods, open 7 days a week.
Did you hear that he bought the most expensive home in California?
$165 million.
For one home.
So let's look at this past week where Bill and Melinda Gates donate $100 million to fight the coronavirus epidemic. Jeff Bezos drops $165 million on a house that has rooms that he probably will never walk through.
I believe that what you're looking at with Bezos is that he is the big swinging dick of the the billionaire club. I think he has yet to understand the responsibility that it comes along with, whereas I think Bill Gates has embraced it and understands that his role as somebody who is as wealthy as he is to help others. I think Bezos is really, I think Bezos is really just showing the world how wealthy he is. But then I remembered he went through a very tragic divorce last year where his wife, hey, honey, if you're out there, I'm around. But, I think he's trying to show off to the world that he still has a lot of money.
Yeah, even though he lost half of what he had, half of a ridiculous amount of money is still a ridiculous amount of money.
It is a ridiculous. I read an article on, I think it was The Atlantic this week, that he is funding a project in, I believe it is the mountains of Texas, where they are building a 10,000-year clock that will only tick every 100 years. But they are building it with the mechanics that it will not need to be repaired or replaced over the course of 10,000 years. Every millennium, a gong will sound off. This is in the middle of a mountain on Bezos' property. So this isn't even for the public.
So he's just going to have this ridiculously useless clock to go along with his ridiculously uselessly oversized mansion.
On the same property as this massive clock is a spaceport.
Which we all need. I mean, if you don't have a spaceport, are you even really living your best life?
Well, this is where we get to the point of the spaceports, which is the fact that I think the uber wealthy are now starting to invest in space travel. You see it with Elon Musk. You see it with Richard Branson. You're seeing it with Bezos, where I think it is the billionaires who are looking at when this climate change happens, when this catastrophic event happens, how is it that they are going to be able to survive the end of the earth?
So do you think they are building their own colony on another planet to then move to when the Earth is uninhabited?
I think that is the road that they are starting to walk down. I don't believe that we're at a phase yet where they're going to start, where they're openly talking about how do we build the next place for us to live. But there clearly is you see it from the billionaires where they are taking the lead in space exploration right now. NASA has completely dropped the ball, given up the space shuttle program. We are now dependent on what is referred to as the International Space Station, which is completely under the thumb of Russia at this point. We are providing astronauts and technology, but we are not even, we're sending people, but it's through the Russian Space Federation. So I definitely think that the uber wealthy are trying to figure out how they can ensure their stability when the shit hits the fan on this planet.
And it may be happening right now. We talked about coronavirus. We talked about it a few weeks ago. That could be eradicating the planet. Today, nearly 15,000 new cases of the deadly coronavirus were reported in one Chinese province, a jump that they linked partially to how they're now diagnosing new cases. They used to wait for symptoms to appear before diagnosing a case. Now they're using blood tests and things like that. But what's even more frightening is 242 new deaths were reported in the same province as well. And then in the United States, the CDC confirmed a 14th person has been infected by the virus. It's a little messed up.
This is a virus that is not going anywhere. It is growing. The numbers are almost entering an alarming level. People are starting to see that it is a this is worse than SARS. This is worse than the swine flu. This is worse than the bird flu. The death rate is growing. And the talk of being able to create some type of vaccine for this, not looking like it's happening at any kind of rate that we can feel secure with. The question really is how bad does this get before it gets better?
And also, they were reporting this week that the possibility that this virus can be transmitted through pipes. Apparently, in one building in Hong Kong, there were two initial patients with coronavirus lived 10 floors apart, but shared plumbing on that side of the building through a toilet. If it's passed through the pipes, I mean, how do you effectively quarantine if you think that you're staying? I mean, no mask is going to protect your butthole if you're on if you're on an exposed toilet.
Well, I mean, if you're speaking of buttholes, absolutely, my DNA will pass through pipes.
Fair enough.
I thought I was going to get a better response than that.
You told me to be less sexual, so I was trying to meet your wishes. Scientists are also now testing a new coronavirus vaccine on mice, but unfortunately, that's probably still a couple of years away from being used in human trials. The virus has caused now close to 1,400 deaths in China and is now known as COVID-19.
Why?
Don't you think?
COVID-18 really was, it was a cliffhanger, the way they ended it. Clearly, the bad guy in COVID-18, the bad guy's car went off the cliff, but when the camera panned over the wreckage, you saw a parachute on the ground not far from it. So we knew there was going to be a COVID-19. What we're
now,
looking
was
at...
COVID-18 the one where Paul Walker died while it was being filmed?
Oh, Ron, did you have to? I mean, Paul Walker was one... He was an American treasure. He was one of our greatest actors. He was America. And for you to seize his tragic demise as an opportunity for a cheap laugh in today's age, especially with what just happened to Kobe Bryant, I'm really surprised that that's where you would seek to tap into a humor reservoir. Very disappointed in you.
I apologize. You know what else is tragic, Brian?
The Bitter Monk from Anchorage Brewing?
Bitter Monk Double IPA from Anchorage Brewing Company.
It's the Chardonnay.
And you know what's worse is the beer is warming up. It's getting close to room temperature, and as it warms up, the Chardonnay taste just really hits you more. But you know, we have made this pledge in the past. We will never not finish a drink of the week that you folks vote for. And Brian, you have held true to your word on that with the drinks that you absolutely hated and finished. So we both need to finish this beer.
Now, do you recall when I had my drink of the week punishment?
Oh yeah, that was that one was just heinous.
You
that
were
had
able,
egg white in it, didn't it?
You were able to find a drink that had that combined elderflower with a raw egg white. Mm. Now I don't know how I didn't catch salmonella poisoning from a raw egg white, but somehow I did. I was able to drink it. It was and Ed, it was as bad as one would think that elderflower egg white. It had some other shit in there. I mean, it really was not a good drink. And this is not a good beer.
No.
Obviously, as you and I become more comfortable with what our likes and dislikes are, we'll be able to communicate to the kind people of Tavor that when they are curating our drink of the week crates, to bring things to the table that are more in line with things that we want.
We'll have a conversation with them. Now, last week we had some conversation regarding the State of the Union, both the Donald Trump address and the actual state of our union. You know, you always ask as each week goes by in between recording these episodes, what new level of bullshit could possibly come out? And this past week, it was regarding the Roger Stone trial. As we know, he was convicted of contempt of Congress, witness tampering. And so, you know, the prosecutors in that case put forth a sentencing recommendation to the judge of 7 to 9 years. Donald Trump, as he often does at 1:18 in the morning, starts firing off tweets about this being a miscarriage of justice, blah, blah, blah. So then Bill Barr takes it upon himself to ask for a more lenient sentence from the judge. As a result of that, the four prosecutors on the case have resigned in protest. Bill Barr was interviewed on ABC News tonight claiming that he had already made the decision to where he felt that his prosecutors were asking for too much jail time. He says, you know what? I'm happy Roger Stone got convicted, but I felt the sentence they asked for was too extreme. So I had already made my decision to get involved prior to President Trump tweeting. And then President Trump tweets. So now I'm in a situation where I have to decide, you know, do I, you know, fall back and don't do anything, or do I stick to my guns and risk being accused of doing the president's bidding? And I said, I have to stick to my gun because I think that's what's right. So he's clearly putting forth this bullshit excuse that President Trump does not dictate what he does. And the reason I believe that that's total bullshit is he made the comment in the interview that Donald Trump and his tweets make it impossible for Bill Barr to do his job. And the White House put out a statement saying that President Trump supports Bill Barr. So if Bill Barr actually was critical of the president, President Trump would have just gone off on him like he did John Kelly today. The fact that there's definitely a coordinated pat on the back response between the White House and Bill Barr leads me to believe that, you know, Donald knew what Bill Barr was going to say, mm-hmm. and understands that Bill needs to try and distance himself somewhat from this situation.
Well, the first thing that Bill Barr did when he came to power was to sit there and immediately discredit the Robert Mueller investigation, was correct. Immediately to review and issue. And remember, if you remember, he tried his absolute best not to issue the original report, but to issue a 2-page summary, which, in using his own words, completely exonerated the president of all wrongdoing.
Yes, it was the most perfect exoneration.
And what's interesting here, and this is where I think, you know, it's it should be an eye-opening moment for people who are wary of Donald Trump, is the fact that, you know, ever since Nixon and I think it was John Mitchell, his attorney general at the time, there really has been it's not a steel curtain, but there's always been a divide between a presidential administration and how hands-on they are in the day-to-day activity of the Justice Department. I mean, I'm sure you remember Attorney General John Mitchell under President Nixon was quite involved in the Watergate cover-up, was making recommendations on how to commit more crimes, as part of the cover-up, what lies to tell and who to tell, that it really created this divide between the Justice Department, who are, when you think about it, they are the law enforcers of this nation. Now you've got a president in place who, after the debacle of this impeachment proceedings that just took place, this man is feeling invincible. There is absolutely nothing that we have right now other than the popular vote that is going to make this man feel that he has to be accountable to anything. Right. And
to your point, you know, there should be that separation between the Department of Justice and the White House. You know, I've heard a few people say that if a president has a good relationship with his attorney general, then that means the attorney general is not doing their job. The attorney general should be there to put the brakes on things that the White House and the president is trying to do when it is going to conflict with the rule of law. So the fact that, you know, anything that Donald Trump wants to have done, the DOJ seems to then follow that, shows that split that should be occurring between those two entities has been erased.
It's a scary time. I'm not going to lie to you. It is a scary, scary time. I believe I will take some type of efforts to ensure that my support for whomever is running against Donald Trump is well known. Whether I may actually contribute to a campaign, I may volunteer, I may do something. Nothing radical, nothing that's going to require too much of my time. But I am genuinely afraid of a second term Trump administration. You have not heard a peep from Congress since the impeachment. They got the Democrats licking their wounds. They are literally fighting themselves right now during the primary and caucus season. We were fortunate this past week not to have another shadow-sponsored caucus, but we had a regular New Hampshire primary this past week, won by
Bernie Sanders. Just a straight, good old-fashioned vote.
And what I find incredible is Joe Biden again coming in fourth.
And somebody, I forget who had tweeted it today, but it was basically someone tweeted at Donald Trump and said, hey, you know, great job getting impeached because of the guy that finished fourth in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a great line.
In fact, with final results coming in, he finished fifth. He ended up falling below Elizabeth Warren in the final count.
Can I ask who came in sixth?
Tom Steyer.
Seventh?
Well, I know this is why you're asking. Your girl, Tulsi Gabbard, came in seventh with 3.3% of the vote.
She would get 69% of the vote if it were up to me.
Nice. She's got 100% of your heart. Nice.
Absolutely, yes. And I would
Yang.
If given the opportunity, I would pass along viruses through pipes if I had the opportunity to meet Tulsi Gabbard.
Let's see here. Andrew Yang came in right after Tulsi Gabbard, 2.8%.
And then he immediately dropped out.
Race of president. He was like, you know what? He's like, all right, I'm not getting traction. I'm out of here. Deval Patrick, who I forgot was running, got 0.4%, dropped out of the race. Michael Bennett also forgot he had been running, got 0.3%, and also dropped out. But yeah, Bernie Sanders capturing 9 delegates with 25.7% of the vote. Pete Buttigieg getting 24.4%, but also getting 9 delegates. And I mean, I guess this is after Iowa, not as much of a shock, but Amy Klobuchar coming in with 19.8% of the vote and getting 6 delegates.
Now, when does my boy Bloomberg get into this race? Because he's running, but he doesn't seem to be involved in any of these primaries or caucuses. So it almost feels like he's running for a third party.
He is running. I think for some of these, he missed the deadline. I feel like he is going to be involved in the South Carolina primary, but I could be wrong on that.
Go Hornets.
But Mike will get it done.
I don't know that that is necessarily a fair campaign slogan, considering that one of his biggest policies when he was mayor of New York was stop and frisk, which is something that he is having a difficult time, overcoming. I mean, really.
Kind of shaking it.
Yeah. It is something that is going to be very difficult for him to connect with a more progressive Democratic Party than what he was running with 12 years ago.
Well, and, you know, Donald Trump, he's been kind of going back and forth with Trump on Twitter today. But Trump even made the comment about, you know, Mike Bloomberg and stop and frisk, even though in one of the 2016 presidential debates, Donald Trump gave his support to the stop and frisk, claiming that it helped get rid of crime in New York City at the time.
Donald Trump will say whatever Donald Trump wants to say at that moment to make the other person look bad.
Oh, yeah. No question whatsoever.
Like, it's incredible. It is incredible.
Would you like to guess how much money Michael Bloomberg has spent so far in his campaign out of his own pocket?
I'm going to say $5
million. $380 million.
What?
He has spent so far.
Wait a second. This guy has spent $300 million and there's still 9 months left to the general election?
Exactly. And as he stated today, he will spend any amount of money necessary to defeat Donald Trump.
Does he really have that kind of money?
I mean, he's a billionaire.
Yeah, but if he's $1.1 billion, he just spent like a third of his money.
We'll see. I mean, I'm sure he's at this point where he's probably getting donations and things. So Donald, I guess, started the fight on Twitter this morning, tweeting out, "Mini Mike is a 5'4" mass of dead energy who does not want to be on the debate stage with these professional politicians. No boxes, please. He hates crazy Bernie and will, with enough money, possibly stop him. Bernie's people will go nuts." To which Mike Bloomberg responded, "Donald Trump, we know many of the same people in New York. Behind your back, they laugh at you and call you a carnival barking clown. They know you inherited a fortune and squandered it with stupid deals and incompetence. I have the record and the resources to defeat you, and I will."
Oh, I'm sorry, but that just spoke to me. If there is anything that I know that it is not something that Biden wants to get to, Warren's not going to do it, but if you are going to beat a man like Donald Trump, you have to fight his fight. You have to make it personal. You have to make attacks. You have to press his, you've got to start pressing his buttons. Right now, you've got people like Biden where, you know, they're trying to take this moral high ground while they are being whipped by Donald Trump's personal attacks. The only way Bloomberg's can do this, and it sounds like, I mean, that's the kind of tweet that not only will it get Trump's attention, but it will rattle him a bit. He's not going to let that slide. He's going to have to come back with something.
Well, Bloomberg was interviewed the other day, and someone asked him, you know, how he felt the American people would feel with two billionaires going up against each other, and he made the comment, "Well, who's the other billionaire?" Which, you know, again, that's got to piss off Donald Trump, too. Anytime anyone questions Donald Trump's true wealth, like, that just sticks in his craw like nothing else.
And, of course, he won't release his tax returns because they're so complicated.
You know, either we wouldn't understand them or he's still being audited. I'm not quite sure which is the answer of the day.
Has there been any action on that audit? I'm sure the IRS has been really after him of late.
I mean, it's got to be the slowest audit known to man because we're about 4 years into it.
It's about 4 years ago he said he wasn't going to release it because he was being audited. I have not heard the results of that audit. This could get very interesting, or it can be literally a dead flounder being flopped onto a warm table.
Quick question before we get off of these New Hampshire caucuses and whatnot. I have a question that kicks around in my head, and I'm not sure which way I'm leaning. But we were talking about Joe Biden, and I look at the way Joe Biden runs his campaign. Do you feel that Joe Biden is running the campaign of a person that A, doesn't want the job he's campaigning for, or B, doesn't feel it's possible that he can lose the job he's campaigning for? Because I feel it's one or the other, because I would say that, you know, Joe Biden hasn't exactly been the most civil person. He, like, yells at people. He tells people not to vote for him if they don't like him. Like, he's very, you know, he left Iowa early. He left New Hampshire early because he felt he wasn't going to do well. Like, he strikes me as someone that has one of those two mindsets, and I can't determine which of it it is.
I would lean towards the idea that he is someone who feels that he is the front runner, that it is only a matter of time before the votes start coming in for him, and he is ignoring the fact that we've had 2 out of 50 contests, and he has run fourth in all of them. Excuse me.
In the whitest states in the country.
He's run fourth and then fifth. So he's, you know, in these two states, clearly he's not connecting with the voters, but he's not acknowledging that that's happened. So it's almost as if he's in denial.
Well, and he needs a big win in South Carolina. The last poll I saw had him leading by 20 points in South Carolina. So if he does not pull off a double-digit win in South Carolina, then I think even he has to acknowledge that his candidacy is in major trouble.
Now, do we know what the poll numbers are looking like right now?
The last I saw, he was polling around 38%. Bernie was polling around 18%. And then I think you had Klobuchar and Buttigieg neck and neck with Warren coming in fifth.
Now, who did you have in that poll coming in sixth?
I did not look that far. It may have been Andrew Yang because it was an older poll. Now, obviously, you know, maybe Blumy would move up.
Did you just call my gal Tulsi Gabbard an old poll?
I did not. I think you're mishearing me, perhaps.
She is a truth speaker.
What is it, her truth or is it Vladimir Putin's truth, Brian?
Oh, listen, you are not going to smear her with that Clinton doublespeak.
I'm just throwing it out there.
She's not a Russian asset. Speaking of Russian assets, fuck you, Ron. Fuck you, Ron.
And has her lawsuit been served to Hillary Clinton yet?
We haven't heard anything.
The last time we reported, they weren't able to catch up with Hillary Clinton, and they tried to give it to her lawyer. Her lawyer was like, I'm just not going to take this.
Yeah.
So we should look into that for next week.
I would have to guess that paperwork is still floating around. Which is odd because all we really need to do is go up to Chappaqua, New York, and look for the nearest Pottery Barn.
You know what's probably floating right now is probably the person trying to serve the documents is probably floating in the Hudson River right now, because that's how Hillary Clinton takes care of business.
Listen, that woman does not fuck around. What I find interesting is that it's Hillary that people assume is the murderer and not Bill.
Well, Bill's just trying to, you know, live out his life as quietly as possible. But you think he might be the evil genius behind it all?
All I'm saying is the fact that there's no record that Hillary was on Jeffrey Epstein's private plane, the Lolita Express. However, Bill apparently flew it multiple times.
That's a very valid point. All right. Well, we will follow up on that next week. Brian, we got a few minutes left. Do you want to do our new segment that we want to try out?
Absolutely.
Well, you actually came up with it, so why don't you roll with this?
Well, I think, you know, the thing I was going, you know, I'm calling this one, What Are You Watching? And one of the things that, you know, we're always looking for is a level of commonality. And one of the things that we, as human beings in these crazy, kooky times is we're all looking for comfort. We're all looking for something, you know, a way for us to, you know, unwind, to dial down the anxiety. And a lot of us look to that from the nice people on our streaming services, whether it be Disney Plus, Netflix, Hulu, what am I missing here? Amazon Prime,
Crackle,
Snafu, Nambla Plus,
YouTube, Red.
There you go. See all these things. And so one of the things I thought would be interesting was for us to kind of talk about what are the interesting things that we saw this past week, and maybe our listeners would be interested in it.
All right, Brian, what are you watching?
I watched two really interesting things this week, both ironically sports-themed. First one on Amazon Prime. It was a very interesting documentary about Ray Boom Boom Mancini. Do you remember him?
I do, or the boxer.
Yes, it was about the rise and fall. Well, it's not really the fall as in like in the ring fall, but it really
Didn't he kill a guy in a boxing match?
It's not about killing him. It was he was in a boxing match, and what happened was as he was boxing. I forgot the kid's name already. God damn it. How did I forget this? The documentary is called The Good Son, and it is on Prime Video. And it is it's a story of an Italian kid growing up in Youngstown, Ohio, which is a blue-collar town probably 30 years after its peak. Interviews with Ed O'Neill from Love and Marriage.
Married with Children.
Married with Children, Mickey Rourke, who was a friend of Ray Mancini. But it was a lot of interesting interviews. It's called The Good Son, and I highly recommend it because what it basically tells is here was a boxer on the rise in his career, literally at the cusp, one fight away from being a national top draw, one of the top fighters of his day. And suddenly his opponent passes away in the ring and literally it just kills his career.
No pun intended.
Speaking of killing careers, I also watched on ESPN this past week the 30 for 30 on Michael Vick, who killed a lot of dogs' careers.
That he did. Not a good man, in my opinion.
Well, this is what I found interesting, because I know you and I had, and the reason why I watched it was because it was just something you and I had talked about a couple episodes ago when the NFL tried to honor Michael Vick at one of their games. Was it the Pro Bowl?
Yes, he was going to be the captain of one of the teams.
Yeah, well, apparently that didn't go over well. So they, it's the first in the 30 for 30 series. I don't know how familiar you are watching them, but they're really interesting sports documentaries. I have found that even if you're not interested in the subject matter, usually the way that the story is told is interesting enough that you find yourself watching it. But this literally feels like an attempt to wash the memory of Michael Vick. This and there's a lot of interviews with him his friends, cohorts, Roger Goodell, teammates, coaches, but it definitely downplays his involvement in the dogfighting. They obviously address it. He acknowledges that, he was breeding dogs. He acknowledges that he was encouraged to breed dogs that would be able to win fights. But there is absolutely no acknowledgement of his role in the murdering of animals that were not going to be winning fighting dogs, whatnot. It's almost as if at that point, the story just kind of steps aside and allows his friends to take the heat on that. Left me with a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth, kind of like watching a dog fight.
Kind of like this Bitter Monk beer.
Oh, this beer is terrible. Ron, what are you watching?
I understand that you are one of the common men, and as such, you entertain yourselves with such activity as watching TV and things of that nature. I see myself as a little bit more elevated, so I haven't really been watching. I've been reading more lately, Brian, because I feel people don't read enough, and maybe you can expand your mind and read. I have currently been working on the Wayward Pines trilogy. I'm about halfway through the second book of that.
Now, what is the Wayward Pines trilogy? And also, fuck you for trying to act like you are superior to me, because two episodes ago, you said that you don't read at all.
Well, I decided I need to make a change and kind of educate myself and start reading again. So Wayward Pines, and it was actually, they converted it into a Fox TV show a few years back, directed by M. Night Shyamalan. But basically, the premise is that this scientist determines that we are forcing the human race to evolve due to climate change and pollution and everything else. And so he creates this suspended animation.
I saw this show.
Process. Yeah.
So I did. I saw it when it was on TV. I saw it. Right. I watched, I think, the first season.
And so he puts some, you know, he puts this large group of people into suspended animation. Some were volunteers, some he kidnapped, and then, you know, they sleep for like 1800 years, and he wakes them up and tries to restart humankind in this town of Wayward Pines. Books, I like the TV show. Books much better than the TV show.
Oh, you arrogant prick. You arrogant fucking prick.
It's
oh,
not the book as is, good as the book, Brian.
You know, the book is, you know, it just goes into so much more detail and you really capture the emotion of the characters.
I mean, there's a lot more depth to it, Brian, when you read the book. And I mean, I get it. You like to sit in front of the idiot box and have things dumbed down for you. But for intelligent, God-fearing people like myself, the book, much better.
Oh, whatever. Whatever, Ron.
But I'm sure I'll be back to watching horrible TV soon enough. So maybe next week I can tell you what I'm watching.
Did you, by any chance, have an opportunity to watch some of the XFL games last weekend?
I did catch some of them. I will say I think the quality of play in the XFL better than the first time they tried to do it.
Better than the first time.
So I will. I'll probably check it out. Made a few bucks, you know, wagering on some of the games because I am a degenerate gambler. So now that we're a second week in, we get better ideas to where the teams are at. I'll probably wager a little bit more money.
Alrighty, I like it. I like it. I love it. If only there was a way for you and I to talk about things, to continue this conversation, but in a way that is not meant for the masses.
Well, Brian, that brings us to our final sponsor of the night, Patreon. That's right, patreon.com. If you go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, go to the upper right-hand corner of the homepage, you will see a link for our Patreon where you can subscribe, you can get yourself some awesome swag, and then have access to fantastic additional content, which we record right after this free episode. That's Patreon, because spending money makes you better than others. All right. Well, check out our Facebook page and our Twitter page. We will have our polls up for Drink of the Week and This Week in Racism. Listen, share, rate, review, subscribe. We love seeing the listeners. I think there's only three states we haven't seen downloads from in the United States, so I'd like to hit all 50 at some point. I think Wyoming, South Dakota, and I'm drawing a blank on the third one, but you bastards out in those flyover states need to start listening to Ron and Brian. Brian, or anything else this week?
Or we go on tour. We just travel to those three states. Rent an RV, hire a driver. We just we tour those states and just download the apps on our phone while we're passing through.
Listen, you don't want Ron and Brian forced down your throats. So
no,
get on the downloading. In the meantime, we're gonna get on over to Patreon. Thank you all again for listening, Brian. I love you, my friend.
Love you more.